welcome to the Raging Bull Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Sturgill. Join me as I interview people from all walks of life who've built successful lives, self-made millionaires, entrepreneurs, traders, authors, and experts in their chosen fields. Discover the mindset and motivation to make successful people tick and learn new ways to apply these ideas, lessons, and successes to help you build your own success and live a better life. This week on the show, we have Cy Wakeman. Cy, we are so excited to have you on the show and hear more about your story as it relates to wealth. So thanks for coming.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Well, you know, on the WealthWise podcast, we often talk about, you know, mindset and mechanism and motivation around wealth. I'm curious for you, we always like to start with our guests in their childhood. I mean, you speak often about leadership, you consult Fortune 500 companies, and I would love to know from you, you know, what are things that you learned early on about leadership, about wealth from your childhood? Where did you grow up? How did you grow up? How'd that impact you?
Gosh dang, big question. I'll step on the therapy couch here for a minute. I grew up in a very small town in Iowa, about 800 people. And my parents, I grew up six of seven kids. And both my parents were entrepreneurs. And so the money supply was kind of binge and purge, or, you know, when you had it, you had it. And when you didn't, you didn't. And what I loved about that is I learned how you live in all parts of the cycle, right? So when you had some pent up demand, how you, you know, took care of that. When the money came in, my mom was a realtor, my dad was a contractor. But what I learned about that is a lot about the difference between wants and needs. And I also learned that if there's something I wanted, I needed to get pretty self-sufficient. So I was an entrepreneur from day one. I cleaned the basement of a lady across the street, her toy room, every Saturday for like a quarter. My brother sublet his paper route to me when I was 6 years old. He probably made 20 bucks a week and paid me three to do all of the deliveries. Like, I kind of grew up within my house. It was kind of like on the streets, man, where you just, you learn how to, get what you need, and you learn how to do it ethically, not like your brothers and sisters. But, I also grew up watching some gender differences in my house, where my dad was pretty traditional and he had a contracting business. And a lot of times we would have what we needed and sometimes we would not have what we needed. And my mom, to her credit, she went out and got a real estate license in the 70s. She was the first female realtor in the state of Iowa. And she would always cover his shortages when times were tough. She always made it happen, but she didn't get a lot of praise for it, because back in that day, she was darned if she did, darned if she didn't. So I watched that that interplay. And so as I grew up, you know, some things I learned about wealth, I learned to be pretty independent. If you want it, you can't depend on other people for it. So I was always the person trying to earn money to give it away.
So talk to me about how this childhood, this upbringing for you directly influenced kind of the way that you see wealth today. Because, you know, as again, we talk about mindset here, and I know you have a very, you know, I mean, counterintuitive is something that you speak often about in terms of your leadership teaching. Talk to me about your view on wealth. How did that childhood and what you learned there, watching your mother, you know, be a realtor when it probably wasn't accepted to be the realtor, how'd that influence your idea and your view of wealth?
You know, I think from early on, wealth to me wasn't about the money. Anytime I wanted to earn money, it was to either achieve independence or freedom or well-being, or to help other people have well-being. So I think one thing I learned early on about wealth is I didn't go to work because I wanted a new pair of jeans. I went to work because I wanted things to be easier for myself and others. I also learned a few other things about wealth. For one, it never dawned on me I could be wealthy. I never really saw how people lived that had wealth. I saw how people lived managing paycheck to paycheck. So it never really dawned on me that, one, I could be wealthy. And the other thing I learned as a female is I learned that being independently wealthy as a female is kind of tricky. You have to kind of hide what you are making, and you pay a price for how that might threaten others. So I learned, you know, my mom always told me, keep 150 bucks in your glove box, no matter what relationship you're in, so that you can get out if you needed to. So to me, it wasn't big dreams of like, want to be wealthy and live on an island someplace and drive a yacht. What I learned about wealth is if I have it, I can have independence and I never have to stay in a place that doesn't align with my own values. So it was kind of like freedom.
If wealth is about freedom, and if wealth describes the whole experience of living a fulfilling life, then what's holding you back from achieving that experience? Sai's background in social work and health management parlay nicely into her work and to her podcast called the No Ego Podcast. Sai works with organizations to help them uncover and dissolve drama, the stuff that results from people's internal beliefs playing out in organizations and businesses. There's a lot that plays into human behavior, but nothing quite so much as each individual's ego, both in shared social settings, but also within yourself, your own internal dialogue and its relationship to how you live a fulfilling life, or not. I was interested in how ego seems to be one of these things that holds so many people back when it comes to wealth.
Money can't buy you that much. It can't buy you happiness. It can get you out of some sticky situations temporarily. But there's nothing money can give you that's truly sustainable without knowing two things. One, you got to know how your mind works so that you quit getting played by your ego. And you got to know how the world works so that you quit arguing with reality, which is an argument you'll lose, but like 100% of the time. So when I was working as a social worker, whether people had zero assets or a ton of assets as a therapist, their issues were the same. They would come to me and they would say, someday I will be happy when, and then they would say, reality is different. So I would be happy and successful if only I had, you know, different circumstances, a different spouse, a different job, a different boss, lived in a different place, had more money, no matter how much money people had. That a common flaw in people's logic on how the world works is they actually believe their happiness was dependent upon their circumstances, some of which was how much money they had. And your happiness is actually correlated to your choices, your habits, your discipline, And happiness can be yours now, regardless of what you have or don't have. Suffering is completely optional and most often self-imposed. And whenever you're basing your well-being on an external factor, including what your wealth is, one, it's not sustainable, and two, it's not real. And so when people are moving in what I call ego, they're seeing the world through the lens of ego. There's motive. They actually believe that their well-being is based on external circumstances. They're in a very vulnerable spot. They see themselves as victims. They get into defensive behavior. They get out of integrity. But if they can get into what I call high self, then wealth becomes an enabler. It becomes a measurement of life force. It becomes symbolic, not real. So money, when people get in high self, they get that money is not real. It's just symbolic of whether they're living in integrity, whether they're living according to their values, whether they're on purpose. And once you can help people understand how their mind works, it opens up a whole new world for them, where the focus then isn't money. The focus is the daily habits that produces well-being, and money is often the reward for that.
Man, you could not have spoken that more in alignment with what I have always seen, what I've always learned and done, is that so many folks can focus on the external wealth, right? Getting rich as quickly as we can. When in fact, you know, when we focus on ourselves as our greatest asset, growing that self, developing that self, well, then money is a result of that, right? The financial, and not just money, right? Not just financial wealth, material wealth, but also, you know, the better relationships, better life in general. How do you help people both recognize that ego, that struggle, and secondly, move beyond it to a healthier place? While chasing money and material things, many people drive past the actual destination of wealth and fulfillment. Money does not lead to happiness. Chase money and you can lose wealth. Chase wealth in all its forms. But it can seem simpler to chase money because it's physical. It's measurable by how much you have in the bank. But alone, that is not wealth. How does someone transcend the unhelpful aspects of the ego to be able to grow themselves and achieve the fulfillment of wealth?
Sure. So the way I explain to people how their mind works, very simply, is it's as if you have a light switch, an invisible light switch, a toggle switch, like a binary switch on your forehead. And when it's toggled down, you're in what I call low self. You're seeing the world through ego, and you're seeing yourself as a victim, and you've got to protect yourself because nobody else will. And your circumstances are the reason you can't succeed. And you've got to figure out the one hustle, the one idea, the one big break that will change everything. The ego is very all or nothing. When you're in what I call high self, toggled up, when the light switch is up, you're into brain coherence. You're using all of your intelligence, not just the gimmick of the day to, you know, day trade, but you're using like all of your intelligence, and you're naturally collaborative, innovative, in tune to kind of life force, to like the natural order of things. And when you're in ego seeking wealth, you're seeking something external that will fix the internal. When you're into high self seeking wealth, what you're really seeking is well-being and the freedom to do what you were created to do to help the world. And we all have both of these. And the cool thing about how this is set up, the switch is binary, is that you can't be in low self and high self at the same time. And so how to get out of ego for a lot of folks is a simple act of self-reflection. Like, instead of what do I want wealth, it's like, what's a great life look like and feel like to me? Like, I take people away from what they want into how do you want to feel? Like, what do you want to do? What do you want to feel like at the end of every day? And then what actions and habits do you need to take to feel that way? And then what naturally turns you on and is your natural gift to give the world? Just getting people understanding what it feels like to be toggled up and what it feels like to be toggled down, because the body gives you super good information, is one thing. But there's a lot of ways that helping people self-reflect is, you know, that's why I just encourage people, like, work with coaches and therapists and read something besides a business book where you just are so willing to question yourself and question your thinking and get mentally flexible and notice when your heart's closed, when your mind's closed, and get out of your own head and quit focusing in externally. And one way I like to really start with that is meditation. And a lot of people go, oh, that's squirrely. But I've been doing transcendental meditation twice a day for years. My whole team does it twice a day for years. And it helps you practice unhooking from your ego so that you can have that knowledge under your belt that when something happens externally, you can rise above it and respond with a higher level of consciousness to that situation. So it's just getting people to play around with managing their own energy and noticing when they respond out of low self versus responding out of high self, and just how reactive they are, just how worried they are, how anxious they are, how, you know, for me, it's like, you know, I know some people are in the business to check the market every 10 minutes, but for me, the behavior of checking the market is self-soothing, not self-care. So I like to teach people the difference between self-soothing, which is, let's see how many followers I have on Instagram, and let's have a drink, and let's do shopping, and I know if I get those new shoes, it'll be really amazing. It's very different than self-care. Self-care is self-reflection, setting boundaries, surrounding myself with people whose lives I want to emulate, who know the secrets to happiness.
Size given wealth a lot of thought, She's been fortunate enough to build material wealth and live a wealthy life together. That's a conscious choice. And I wanted Sai to dive deeper into the whole idea of self-reflection and its place in uncovering your internal dialogue, beliefs, assumptions, and what wealth means to each individual beyond the material side of things of what makes me happy and into what is happiness, independence, or anything else. Internally, what does being able to enjoy wealth mean? And how does self-awareness, self-reflection, play into that?
I think, you know, in the beginning, just questions are the key to self-reflection. And so just asking yourself questions, am I happy? You know, what's getting in my way? What's one thing I could do today that would increase my happiness? Even just self-reflecting as you go through the day, what things did you do today that you found yourself lost in bringing you joy? And what things did you not? What do I need to quit? Like, what are things I'm doing on a regular basis I need to quit? It doesn't matter where you start. Any question's a good one. So my own life right now, if you pay attention, the question will come to you. You don't have to do it perfectly. Just start with any question. I was reading an article, an old one in Vanity Fair, about Gloria Steinem, because she's always been an idol of mine. And she realized when she looked around her apartment, she was in a state of her life where she wasn't that happy. And she had this beautiful New York apartment and was full of boxes. And she'd never even unpacked. And she's like, you know what? I never really had a home when I was little, and I've never really given my own self a home. And so her big insight was, as we get to be adults, we need to give ourselves what we didn't get as kids. And it's not money. We need to give ourselves the very thing that we didn't get as a kid. And we need to quit looking to other people to get it. We need to quit looking to buy it. We need to give it to ourselves. And so I just started walking with a question a day. That question was, what did I not get as a kid that I need to give myself today that I'm looking at other people to give me? Like, every day, get up in the morning and just pick a question and just walk with it. You don't have to sit. You don't have to journal. Just pick a question and walk with it all day long. And you'll be amazed what your mind does with that.
Tell me about stories, you know, in your own life or for others where you feel like you've seen material wealth and relational wealth follow this. I mean, has it been true in your own life? Has it been true in the lives of those you've worked with? I'd love to hear a story about someone who just had a breakthrough in this way.
So I think I've had so many people that have had breakthroughs. The piece of this that I first want people to understand is a lot of people think that my suffering comes from my external circumstances, and it really doesn't. Your reality is never as harsh as you think it is. It comes from the story you make up about your external circumstances. And so one point of self-reflection, you ask yourself questions like, what do I know for sure? And that one question, what do I know for sure, loosens the ego's grip on your world. Like, it can take my ex-husband who's trying to steal my kids and violate the custody agreement, and I go, what do I know for sure? And it takes that version of him and turns him into a guy who's asking to have an extra day with his own children to take them snowboarding over the holidays. Like, so much of what our ego has us believing, the view of the world, is story, not reality. So my story is like, I have a micromanaging boss who treats me like a child. My reality, when I really meditate on the self-reflection question, what do I know for sure? And I peel away judgment and assignment of motive and color commentary. Well, it's just busy. I'm like, well, where'd the crazy come from? They're like, I added that. And we add all of this stuff on to who we are, and especially with wealth, we add on our past. Well, I've never been that girl. And we add on our future. That will never work. And we basically choke off any dream that we have by just, what do I know for sure? So when I left a 20-year marriage, it was 2010. We had invested heavily in some property. My husband had managed that business well. I was off making money and not paying enough attention to that part of our business. I had just written my first book and I was off lecturing. And I left that marriage $1 million in debt. like straight debt, like sold all the property. The bank said, we'll stay in close contact because you owe us $1 million. Now, for some of your listeners, that's like a day's work. For me, that was a lifetime of work. Like it was mind boggling to me. And I would get into the story of like, I'll never get out of this. I mean, my credit report, I couldn't even rent a house for my children.
Wow.
Because my credit report 10 years ago was that bad. And I have been homeless basically twice in my life, reliving my parents' kind of, you know, you make a bunch and you lose a bunch kind of life. And I had so many stories about like, I'm going to need, you know, to really compromise myself and give up my company to go get a job and pay this off. I had so many stories. And then every day I just go, what do I know for sure? I know I have a gig today. I know I need to show up and do a good job. I know I need to be a good mom to my kids. I'm getting out of bed and I'm putting one step in front of the other. And then I started to really expand that. I'm like, well, wait a minute. What do I know for sure? I took all that debt on in an unfair divorce because I didn't want to lose my kids. What's that tell me about my boundaries? And do I play big enough? And what do I know for sure about debt? And have I sought out an expert? And I found a banker friend in the industry and he's like, no, no, no. Part of this debt just isn't even appropriate debt. Like the bank has some liability in this. I'm like, what? So I just stuck with one question for meditation every single day. What do I know for sure? I need to be in Chicago by 7. What do I know for sure? And doing that, and when I didn't know anything for sure, I pulled in the experts. And doing that 10 years later, I have a great deal of wealth built up in my own retirement and, you know, and in my business. But if I had lived in my story, I would have never gotten out of bed ever. Instead, I lived in my present. What do I know for sure? And what can I do in the next minute that will impact my life and the life of my kids? And I did that. And that's all I did for, you know, years at a time. And suddenly I look in my retirement account and I'm like, dang, you know, retirement savings. I'm like, that's accumulated a lot of wealth.
I really appreciate you sharing your personal story on that because it illustrates it so well. And I love how you've touched on, you know, this idea you speak often about like reality-based leadership, but really reality-based living. I mean, you know, the idea of being able to have these self-reflective conversations with ourselves, asking ourselves questions is certainly important, but then also we have to be mindful, I think, and don't let me steal your words, of the negative self-talk that we have in terms of, you know, like you said, telling this story that may or may not be true, but it's if we tell it to ourselves enough, it becomes true. It becomes our, you know, reality, though it's actually not real.
And I think our wealth shrinks according to that, because what I didn't realize when I would tell myself the story, like I shouldn't ask for the raise because I might get fired. Like I was so scared to ask my boss as a female for a raise in my early years. I'm like, he'll get mad at me and I won't have a job at all. Well, in the moment, that may have been a $2,000 decision, but over a lifetime, that was a, you know, $200,000 decision, the way wealth builds. So for me, a lot of times, my stories, my negative self-talk was expensive. And my ego does really poor math. To keep me safe, I thought, you know, $2,000 isn't that big a deal. I know that my male counterparts are making 10 grand more than me. 10 grand, it's not worth fighting for. As a female, I said this so often, turn the other cheek. It's not worth fighting for. But if you had told me that was a $200,000 decision, I would have been like, oh, hell yeah. I'm fighting for it, right?
Yeah. And even that kind of, you know, internal talk you had there of, I don't want to push too hard. Oftentimes that talk is accompanied by this word should, right? I shouldn't push too hard. I shouldn't do it. And we, you know, talk to me about the word should. Like I find the word should can trap people so often in their stories. Do you feel like one of the important things of self-reflection is to question our shoulds?
Absolutely. And in fact, whenever you're saying I should, you're just taking an external limitation and accepting it for yourself, because every should comes from your corrupted interpretation of what other people would give you permission to do. And we need to stop asking for permission and instead ask for support, right? And it really changed things because these shoulds are really sneaky ways that our ego limits us far more than our external opportunities limit us. It's a way of keeping people playing small. And I think so many of us, we vacillate. It's almost passive aggressiveness. We play super small and then we try and go after the big wealth grab. Like I play super small in my life where I have all these opportunities to maximize my well-being. And then I hear one idea that I'm going to put all my, you know, my bets on and really make it big. I'm going to somehow quickly make up for all the playing small I did my whole life. And the answer isn't to go after some long shot wealth scheme. The answer is to stop playing small and just play larger and larger and larger in small ways in your entire life. And that's where the shoulds keep you playing small. Well, I shouldn't feel this way. I shouldn't do that. I shouldn't ask for what I need. The shoulds actually keep you out of integrity. And being out of integrity is never rewarded long-term, in my opinion.
As anyone who has taken the journey knows, diving deep in your own internal assumptions through a process of personal discovery, along with the tools like meditation, self-reflection, journaling, faith, exercise and sports, solitude and quiet, and anything that allows you to uncover internal awareness beyond material things and surface thoughts and into deeper awareness is an exciting journey for anyone wishing to build a richer, more rewarding life. What did Sai uncover through her own process of discovery? And what are her motivations behind her experience of living a wealthy life?
My motivation's always been freedom from suffering. I want people to understand that they're not prisoners of their thinking, that it's all about life doesn't have to hurt. Like life is messy, but you can live happy. And so I love setting people free from their own egos, from their own mindsets, you know, and the way I do that is I tend to see the world in counterintuitive ways. Most people think about wealth. They're like, I got to go out after it. I got to hustle. I got to make it happen. But my favorite story was supposedly about Michelangelo. I don't know if it's true, but after he carved the Statue of David, he was supposedly asked, was it hard? And he goes, no, it wasn't hard. I just removed from the marble anything that wasn't David. So I see so many people trying to plan their life about what they're going to create. And I would encourage people to get very quiet and take away what doesn't serve them. And they'll be pretty shocked at the life that they have. And then I think things like happiness and wealth, and that's where they have place to center into and you attract it.
Yeah, I love that idea. You know, just it's a beautiful concept, the idea that wealth is actually revealed by removing what we don't need and that which isn't helpful, rather than kind of the maybe modern or Western idea that wealth is achieved by what's being added. And actually, that's something we can start any day by sitting down and saying, actually, what do I need to be removed so that my true self and my real wealth and that happiness, the well-being, can be revealed in this time? I mean, certainly a hard thing starts with self-reflection, starts with asking those tough questions. But I love that concept. I love that idea. Well, it has been such a joy talking to you. One of the questions we always end our podcast with, one I'll end with here. For you, Sai, you know, from a little girl in Iowa watching her mom work to now the woman who, you know, runs her own business, has a team, speaks to Fortune 500 companies and works to eliminate, you know, suffering in the world. What is the one piece of wealth wisdom that has brought you from there to here and continues to guide you into the future?
That's a tough one. Let's see. What's one piece of wealth wisdom? For me, it's surreal that I have wealth. So it's like I'm still trying to emphasize. One thing that would be wealth wisdom for me growing up without a ton and being where I'm at now is to always remember that you already are wealthy. You just need to spend the time uncovering it.
Tell me what that looks like, Sai.
So for me, whenever I think I lack something, if I really sat and self-reflected, I would realize I already have it. I just haven't claimed it. So I want to earn money to go on a vacation to have fun with my family. I go, well, wait a minute. I already have the present moment to have fun with my family. I already have that which I desired. I just need to claim it. And so for me, true wealth is the understanding that that which I desire is already mine. I just haven't claimed it.
Mm. I love that. That is true wealth wisdom to take us out. Si, where can our listeners get more of your wisdom? I know you've written books. I know you have a podcast. I know you're online. Tell them where they can find you and hear more about you.
Absolutely. My podcast is called No Ego, and it is on all the platforms. And we are prolific. We believe in abundance, and we share often on social media. So we have an incredible YouTube channel and Instagram and LinkedIn. It's all at Si Wakeman. And we would love people to follow, share, subscribe, push all those buttons and ring all those bells.
Si, it has been a pleasure. I would encourage our listeners to do the same. You know, if they've enjoyed our talk together, there's just so much more that they can both find out and use to grow themselves from your message and from what you share. Si, thanks for being on the show this week, and may you continue to alleviate suffering and just help a bunch of people.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Well, that's a wrap for this episode. Thanks for listening. I invite you to visit RagingBull.com/podcast. That's RagingBull.com/podcast. To discover more episodes, to learn more about people who have created, built, and lived successful lives. Also, remember to subscribe to one of Raging Bull's newsletters. Join me on the next episode as we share more stories from our guests on the wisdom behind wealth and how they built their own success. Raging Bull Podcast is brought to you by RagingBull.com, helping traders succeed through education, resources, and where you can watch real traders make trades. Raging Bull, learn to trade. We'll show you how.